Lecture 16. My word is law. We all know about the law of cause and effect. We all know how the law of cause and effect functions. We know what benefit the law of cause and effect is to our relative world. And that is just what it is. It's a benefit to our relative world. Now, it is fun to play with absolute. It is fun to play with the is and the allness and all of these wonderful things. And for us to even begin to understand what isness and allness means is quite a dictionary experience. And that's just what it is. It's a dictionary experience. It's not an experience that we can readily understand from our relative point of view, because it talks about terms and concepts that are beyond our imagination. But the law of cause and effect is very much in our imagination. It's very much in our concept of understanding. If you smile at someone, they smile back. If you do unto others as you'd have them do unto you, that should be the law of cause and effect very much at work. We see that the teachings of Jesus, the teachings of the Christ, were very much the law of cause and effect. Love the Lord thy God with all the heart and soul and being. That's the first commandment. And the second like unto it is love your neighbor like yourself. So, how do you love yourself? Do you love yourself with all the joy in your heart? Do you love yourself with all of the conviction in yourself of feeling that you are a good person? Do you love yourself with realizing that with all the errors you've made in your life, and everyone has made hundreds and 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 hundreds of errors. Did I include them all? Pretty much? Okay. I didn't say thousands, you know. I just said hundreds. But we've all made many errors. Errors which are not anything to do with our spiritual life. Errors which have something to do with our spiritual life only insofar as our integrity stands forth. All of the rules of humanity, all the rules of society that you have chosen to follow are really of no account at all, except that you chose to follow them. You have agreed to follow the rules of society, and therefore they are sacrosanct. They cannot be violated. And you say, well, wow, that's pretty heavy. Yes, it is. But you are equal to it. What is the greatest rule of all? And we say it's the law of cause and effect. How does the law of cause and effect? Do we want to have anything that doesn't belong to us? Would we like to own everything? Would we like to possess everything? No. Would we like to have the use of everything? It's not bad. Would we like to have the food when we want it, air when we want it, water when we want it? Would we like to have material objects whenever we want them? And when we don't want them, we don't have them? Well, that's how the human relative world was designed. The human relative world was designed to give to humanity whatever it wanted, when it wanted it, and when it didn't want it, it was not there. It was no longer in their experience. For what we don't think about is not in our experience. Well, Jay Leno has, what, 200 or 300 cars in his garage. He likes cars. He likes saving old cars. He likes remodeling them. He likes sports cars. He likes many things. And he has the money to afford it. And that's his hobby. He has these cars. And he has a lot of fun with them. But he has to take care of them. Well, he has the money to take care of them. He has other people taking care of it. What does he do? He uses it when he wants it, and when he doesn't want it, his chauffeur or his garageman puts it away. Neat, huh? When you don't want something, your employee puts it away, and you don't have to think about it. Well, this is the way it is in the absolute, in the allness, you might say. Because everything that is enjoyable for us, we have when we want it, and when we don't want to have it, when we don't think about using it, it's not there. This is a pretty powerful thing, a pretty wonderful thing. My word is law. Okay, I'm going for a drive this afternoon. And I think it'd be fun to drive in a Karmann Ghia, you know. That old thing you want to drive in? Sure. But of course, the Karmann Ghia I'd drive in would be a brand new one. And what about a Maserati? What about a Jaguar? What about a Rolls Royce? What about a Mercedes? What about a Miata? Hey, Miata, that sounds like fun. Little old car. I like a nice blue color and nice tan interior. Bose sound system. That wouldn't be hard to come by, would it? Just go out and drive that lovely thing. And when I'm not using it, what do? I put it away. I don't put it in my bed. I don't put it in my living room. I put it in the garage and I put it away. I don't think a thing about it. But when I choose to use it, it's right there for me. Right there. The law of cause and effect gives it to me with no uncertain terms. It's a wonderful thing. Now, everything that you have ever wanted in your life, you have achieved. You say, well, that's not true, Herb. There's a lot of things I've wanted that I didn't get. No, there isn't. Everything that you have chosen that has meant anything to you, you had it. John and Anita's trip to Europe is a perfect example of that. And your trip to Africa and then up to Europe, perfect illustration of that. And Stefan's trip to Europe, perfect illustration. Gertrude's trip, wherever she goes, a perfect illustration. All of you. Ellen? Ellen says, we're going to go to Africa. We're going to speak to those people. I love those people. I love those people. I love those people. I love those people. We went to Africa. What happened? They loved her to pieces. They just ate her up. They said, she's the greatest lady they've ever met. The most wonderful, intelligent, marvelous being they'd ever met. They just loved to be with her. Well, what did she do? She put a cause in motion. I love those people. And those people loved her. Though simple as can be. Stefan put a cause in motion that he's a practitioner, and all of a sudden people came to him for practitioner work. He misunderstood a few of the cues, but he got back on base after a while. But this is the way it is. We forget sometimes that we did put a cause in motion to be a practitioner. And that when people come to us with silly needs and wants, that they're really asking us as a practitioner, not as a participant in their problem. You follow me? It's easy to fall into the fact that people think that they fall in love with us because they were so wonderful and we're so great, but no. They have come and fallen in love with us because we are love. They've fallen in love with us because we have the answer to whatever it is they're asking. And we have to keep our skirts clean, so to speak. We have to keep our aim high so that we don't fall into the trap of somebody else's problem. Many psychiatrists have relationships with their customers or patients or whatever they want to call them. And they think, well, that's okay. They need it. They want it. They came to the psychiatrist for help. They have a problem. Their problem is that they're too sexy and they need to be master of themselves so that they don't indiscriminately go around doing things that are going to hurt them. And then the psychiatrist falls right in the trap and joins in with the moray of conditions and doesn't help the patient at all. In fact, just makes it difficult for himself. It's very important. It's very important. You are putting causes in motion for all sorts of wonderful things in your life, and you're experiencing all sorts of wonderful things. Every time Inga turns around, she says, I'd like to do this, and it's done. She says, I'd like to do that, and it's done. She says, I'd like to have some certain fittings for the water faucet. It's done. And she says, well, where are they? I said, they're on the faucet, or they're over there, wherever you want them. And no matter what she has asked, she has always gotten it. Now, is that a fulfillment of the law? Because there's a lot of things that she's gotten that she has done nothing with. She's done nothing with it. She got it, but she did nothing with it. Now, is that bad? No. She's just piling up her sports cars to use whenever she wants to. She doesn't have to use them just because she has them, does she? So, you don't either. You don't have to use things just because you create them in your world. But you create them so that you can have them when you want them. And that's beautiful. One time Ingeborg was saying, I need to have more outlets on this water pipe. I need to have more. And so she screwed a double onto a double onto a double onto a double, and she ended up with just a double, you know. And I said, Ingeborg, over in the drawer is a six faucet or seven. It's a seven faucet, I believe. A seven faucet faucet. Screw that on. You got seven faucets right away without putting on these doubles on there, which don't add up to anything for you. A double on a double is a double. And so she did that. She said, wonderful. Gee, that's great. That's so handy. Well, we have much more than we realize. We have much more than we ever give ourselves credit for. And because of that, we don't realize it. We don't appreciate it, Ellen. And so these are things that we should be aware of and things that we should be conscious of and place into our awareness for our benefit to have. Now, are you ready for such things? Are you ready to fulfill everything that you'd like to have and everything that you'd like to enjoy? Are you ready to have a Mercedes when you want it? Are you ready to have a Rolls Royce when you want it? Are you ready to have, I think it cars. Are you ready to have a Learjet when you want it? John, how about that? Would you like a Learjet?
Sure.
It'd be kind of interesting, wouldn't it? So when you are ready for anything, then you have it. And that is exactly what you do. You put the cause in motion, and you say, let there be light. And Ellen is shaking the bulb there. Ellen, there's a bulb on the dining room credenza. You see, when you're living in this world, you have to have your mind capable of thinking of many things at once. And I'm giving you a talk here on the word and the law and the demonstration of it. And Ellen wanted to demonstrate this, and so I helped her demonstrate it. And so she takes one of these clear balls, which was set for the overhead of the bathrooms, and she's putting it in there. And, you know, I was going to mention this to somebody else, but I am a very cautious person. I like to see things done as beautifully as possible. And when I see you making individual soups for lunch, I think to myself, where are your brains? Where are your brains? The individual soups are for an individual soup when you want an individual soup. The individual soups are not for multiple soups. You're making 11 soups, 11 soup bowls full of soup. And you want to put noodles in it? Take out a bag of noodles and fix them up in 10 minutes. You want to put veggies in it? Put it in there. You got a bunch of drumsticks there with drums left on the stick? Cut it off and chop it up and put it in there. You have all sorts of good things to make a Schlumgullen noodle soup. And it would be very much better than the stuff that you had there of the dried out peas and the dried out carrots and the dried out peppers and the dried out noodles that had to be watered down and wetted up. And then you make them without reading the instructions on the container, and you make them so that they're still undone. And I find that charming. Now, I recommend from this moment forward, if we have one person or two who wants soup, that's fine. But if the whole group is going to have soup, we make that soup from stock. We make that soup from noodles that we make out of the spaghetti noodles or whatever other kind you want. You make that soup out of, and you should have angel hair around for that soup. Wouldn't that be nice? And have a can of peas and a can of carrots and a can of corn and throw it all in there. And maybe a can of chicken. And my God, that soup would be the whole meal. It'd be a super, super soup, you know. And it might even have some left over. But always use your head. Use your head. If you're doing something for one or two, then you take single servings. Can you imagine going and buying single servings of peas? You buy 11 cans of peas, the little cans, so each person would have some peas. That would be kind of a stupid thing. I don't know who would buy like that, but it certainly wouldn't be my recommendation. And if you're going to have peas in your carrots, well, you buy a big gallon can of peas. 11 people can certainly put away a gallon can of peas, you know, and have a ball doing it. And with carrots, the same way. These things that from Smart and Final are available. But no, we buy as though we're in some what do you call it, restaurant, some...
Gourmet,
thank you. Some gourmet restaurant. And the gourmet restaurant serves only these special peas shipped out from Peeland to be used for special pea situations, you know. And this is my point of view. It's been my point of view, and it's been expressed many times before, and it's been ignored many times. Now, I don't know, maybe it's time that I put a new cause in motion about it. And the new cause is that we eat well here, but we also eat intelligently. If we're going to do things, we do them intelligently. Now, last night we had wonderful, what do you call it, drumsticks, chicken drumsticks. And we made 2 drumsticks for each person, right? And then were there any drumsticks left over?
Yes.
Why were there 2 drumsticks for each person and more drumsticks left over? If there were 2 drumsticks for each person, that we should never have made more than the 2 drumsticks for each person. You understand? Okay. Then we go to Jerome and we say, hey, Jerry, baby, you want 1 drumstick or 2 for supper? And he says, 1, please, right? First day? Yeah. And we say to Anita, Anita, have you cooled it or are you still a vegetarian? And Anita says, I'm a vegetarian from the word go. Thank you, thank you. So there's 2 more. Now that's 3 drumsticks we don't make. And then John, who is a proclaimed vegetarian when there's nothing, no meat to eat, he has to say, yes, I would love to have those drumsticks. And Irene, did you have 2? Did you have 2, Ellen?
Yes.
Did you have 2, Gertrude?
No.
You had 1.
Yes.
And you didn't tell the cook beforehand that you only wanted 1, huh? And Ingeborg, did you have 3?
Yes, I had.
You had 3.
Yes.
That's smart. I had 3, too. And Sylvia, did you have 4?
2.
And Stefan, did you have 6?
2.
Okay. But now, you see, what we do when we have special foods, we check around to see. We put the cause in motion to do a most effective job. And we have to be very careful, because if we're doing an effective job, we are not making more than people want. We have what we call the leftover plate. And it seems that our little angel here leaves a lot of things left over. There's a lot of veggies he doesn't like and a lot of salad he doesn't like, and that's okay. That's okay. But I would venture to say he is the only one who is excused to remove anything off of his plate from a normal amount. And I would like to remove 2/3 off of my plate, which is what I have asked to do all along. But it never happens, so I just eat what's there and enjoy it. The thing is, this is something we must always honor. A good chef, a good cook, and I'm not speaking against you or for you, John, but a good chef or a good cook checks with the client before they make the meal. And if you see some petite little old lady there, you're not going to give her a heap and holler of potatoes with gravy on it. You're going to give her a little slug. And when you see a little guy and you know what his appetite is, you respond to it. Now, what does this have to do with my voice, my word is law? Well, each one of us wants to be abundant. Each one of us wants to be generous. Each one of us wants to share all that we have with everyone. We want to be outstanding in our generosity. Well, to be outstanding in our generosity means one thing. We use judgment. We use judgment. If we don't use judgment, then we have not used the law of cause and effect at all. You see, to waste things is a matter of cutting off our supply. When we waste things, we cut off our supply of good things because we know we waste it. We know that we have used it improperly. And we want to always use everything properly. Everything that we do, we want to use it properly. Now, wherever we go, whatever we do, we want to always do things in order, in ordinum. We want to always do it in order so that we are able to benefit ourselves and whatever the circumstances are. Now, for instance, are you possessed by things in your life? You say, oh, no, 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 no. Ingeborg, are you possessed by things in your life?
No.
I said to Ingeborg at noon, I said, Ingeborg, that's a lovely glove. It fits the boy perfectly. Are you making that for him? And she says, no. No, maybe another time, but no. Now, what should Ingeborg have said if she were not possessed? If the Queen of England had come in and said to Ingeborg, what lovely gloves you are making there, and try them on, Queenie. And so the Queen tried them on, and then Ingeborg says, now you make them yourself, these are mine. She wouldn't do that, would she? She would say to the Queen, she would say, my lady, please take them, they're yours. I could not have made them for a more wonderful person. And don't argue with me. And you see, I got you down. And so she gives generously because it's the Queen. Now, if it's some little ragamuffin that comes in off of the street and has cold hands and no gloves, and wants the gloves, she'd say, oh, no, 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 these are mine, these are mine. You can't have those because I want to wear them myself. And the Queen doesn't need the gloves. She has 3,201 pair in her room right now. And she doesn't need them, but the little ragamuffin kid does need them. But it's not a matter of need. It's a matter of possession. When we hold on to things, when we have the opportunity to share it, we are very remiss in our opportunity to grow and expand and put the law of cause and effect into motion. Now, I know Ingeborg would like to argue about this, but there's really...
I have only a question.
All right, what is your question, madam?
My question is, if I'm the only one in my world...
Why did you create the kid coming in and putting on your gloves? You stuck them on his hand yourself. And if you're the only one, where did you find his hand? I mean, you know, we could play this game. We can say, I'm the only one, and then we can respond to other people. And during the School of the Master, every one of you were told you were the only one here with me and not to open the door or close the door for another person because there's nobody there. And you kept holding the door open for people. And you kept setting the place for people. You made the meals for people. Everybody should have made their own meal for me and them. I would have had many meals. But do you understand what I'm saying?
I understand.
We play the game to the hilt to get the benefit from it. Now, you say, John says, Herb, why are you picking on me? The soup and the the drumsticks and stuff like that, why are you picking on me? Well, it's easy. You're a big target. And Ingeborg says, why are you picking on me? Every time you say something about me, you say something that gets me. And I don't need to. You do it so beautifully yourself, you know? It stands right out. If you wouldn't do those things, if you hadn't let somebody try it on, I wouldn't have thought a thing about it. But you gave it to him to try on. He didn't come up to you and grab it away from you and say, let me try that on, did he? No, you gave it to him. Now, you see, when you play the game that you're the only one here, and I just love it when you throw these things at me, and then you don't act that way, it makes me think, boy, oh boy, what interesting games people play. How they say one thing and act another way. We want to be very careful about this. Be very careful about this. Now, John is a very wonderful guy and I love him. But John is not free of my corrective eye any more than any of the rest of you are. I'm going to jump on your backs and remind you of things as we go along, because that's why you're here. This is a school. This is a school where each one of us is being not tested so much as being reminded when we forget what we have agreed to do. We've all agreed, and tell me if I'm wrong, we have all agreed to be unconditionally loving at all times, correct?
Yes.
Huh?
Yes.
Oh, you say yes, that's good. That is a toughie. That's a toughie. We've all agreed to be unconditionally loving at all times. We all agreed to be non-possessive. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, Stefan? Agreed to be non-possessive, huh? Now, I don't want you to change, but I just love it when I see you wear your red backpack, I mean your orange backpack. You say, I got my orange backpack, it's just the perfect size, just what I want to have, and I'm so happy with it. But you see, that's possession. It's okay. It's okay, Stefan, you understand? But it is possession. It is possession. Anything is possession. You have your jacket, you have your pants, you have your shoes. That's possession. And you have your body. That's possession. Well, you know, Herb, when are you going to start? When are you going to stop? But this is all part of the law of cause and effect. Now, when you are not possessed by anything, you just use everything and enjoy it. Now, let me ask you a question. Who does the body you are using belong to? Can I say the allness? Can I say God? And we are God. But who does it belong to? It belongs to God. So now, how are you taking care of the body that God is letting you use or the allness is letting you use? How are you taking care of it? Do you keep it nice and clean? Do you keep it clothed in an attractive way? Do you keep the hair cut in the proper way? Do you do this, that, and the other thing to it? Pretty much so. Sometimes you forget. Sometimes you forget. Sometimes you forget and you eat things that are not good for you, and you know they're not good for you, but they taste so good, it's hard to refuse them. You know, we have these little fetishes about ourselves. Chocolate, oh my, how wonderful it is, you know. And of course, the Swiss people come over here and make it hard for these American people who are unaccustomed to having such glorious chocolate that we just have to gobble it up. Okay, so you're the master. You're the master of whatever you do. And so when you do anything, you do it with love. Now, it's true, God went and tossed sand on the seashore, on the ocean bottom, and everywhere without number. And God tossed stars in the sky without number. God tossed people on various planets that we haven't even known about yet, and various galaxies and various places that we don't even know about. There's a lot of things we don't know. And in John's body alone are enough cells to make, let's say, 7 trillion human beings. 7 trillion human beings. Can you imagine that? In his body alone are enough cells. If each cell, and each cell is capable of not only reproducing itself, but of reproducing the entire organism. You understand that? Reproducing the entire organism. So any cell from his body, if it were taken and put aside by itself, it would reproduce itself at, like a chameleon, reproduce its tail, and it would reproduce itself in toto. Interesting. So, what is John's body? He should really take care of it. When he washes himself, he's throwing all these potential bodies down the drain that are the skin that's flaking off, as we all do. We want to really treasure this that we are. We want to really treasure this that we are and be it. Now, my notes here say, I make sure I listen to the voice within, for it is the Word. The Word is the declaration of truth and wisdom. Divine wisdom manifests as in the Logos, or the Word. Controlling principle of the universe, Word, Logos, and Reason. These are the activities of the law of cause and effect. You each are living the law of cause and effect as a human being. And as a human being, you can live it right to the top of the law, which is to the point of being divine, which is to the point of being a totally fulfilled, revealed being. Would you like that? It sounds like it'd be kind of fun, doesn't it? But really, when you reach that point of being a totally fulfilled being, you no longer have any human aspects about you, and so you have no feeling of enjoying something because you are it. And you don't understand that. But yet, if I said to you, what is the cell on your bottom doing, you know? One cell right on your tootsie back here, what's it doing? What's one cell on your calf doing? You don't know. You don't know. Because it is divine. It is doing its perfect functioning thing. And then you get in there and mess it up. You get in there and feed it things that are not beneficial for it. But not because you feed it, but because you know it's not beneficial. If you didn't know it was not beneficial, it would just go on through and not be, oh, come on, Herb, you can't eat poison and not have it bother your body. You sure can. People do it all the time. People are eating poison things all the time, and it's not bothering their body, it's not bothering their mind, it's not bothering anything. They're doing it all the time. Little children have been eating lead paint for years. A few of them are susceptible to it, but most of them are not. Little children have been eating dirt forever, as long as there's been little children. They're playing in the air. When we were in Africa, they didn't have much water for the kids to wash themselves with. And the kids were wiping their nose with their hands and stuff like that and playing in the dirt and doing all sorts of fun things. They were just great. And then they came and gave us their hands to kiss. So we had to kiss each one of these schnurrily hands with the dirt on it and think nothing of it. And there was nothing to it. I loved them. I loved every one of them infinitely, and they were great. But you see, if I had started to worry, oh dear, there might be diseases there. Oh yes, yes, this is rampant and that is rampant and this is current in Africa or this is current in South America or this is current in Texas or something. You bring it to yourself. You're the creator of your world. You use the law of cause and effect to bring about whatever it is you want. My body is the temple of what?
Living spirit.
And every organ, action, function of my what?
Is whole and perfect.
Of my what?
My body.
My body is whole and perfect. Right, right. I live in my ideal.
Spirit, mind, and body.
I am wealthy. Yeah, that comes next, yo. And see, we have these positive, dynamic, wonderful statements. They should be right on the tippy tip of our tongue at all times. And not that you have to have them in my rotation. You have them in your rotation because whatever values you have on things may be just slightly different, that you want to put certain things first. Now, for years, I put my son and my wife and my grandson and so forth and my brothers and sisters on the top of the list. But they've changed. They've changed. On the top of the list now is Ellen, Sylvia, and Inga, and Button and Love, and the cats. And following that are all you guys. And following that is Mark and Faith and all my brothers and sisters and relatives. And then following that is God Unlimited, University of Healing, and so forth. Now you see, I have the rotation. I change it from time to time. And along with the my brothers and sisters and stuff, is the healing list, the treatment list. I have that in there too. So, you see, when your mind is 100% surrounding these beautiful concepts and putting these beautiful concepts in motion, what happens to you? You're fantastic. You're fantastic. Now, if anything should take place in your life, you immediately speak your word. I'm whole and perfect. If anything should take place that your word is not strong enough for being whole and perfect, well, then you go and have it taken care of. And you don't make any bones about it. You just keep on working at it. You got to get back to the drafting board and do a little more preparation on yourself. Because you can. Right now, this minute, you can Speak your word and say, I am whole and perfect. I live in my ideal spirit, mind, and body. I am wealthy and all that sort of stuff. You can right now. What would happen? Ellen, let's ask you. What would happen if you were living in your ideal spirit, mind, and body right now? Just tell me, what would you look like? She's taking her a while to figure that out. But go ahead.
I just look then in the same way.
Just like you look now?
Mm-hmm. Unless I want to change, because I have the freedom to create any moment new.
Now, what is she saying? She says, when she speaks her word and lives in the now, in the allness, in her archetype of being, she looks exactly like she looks now. Is that true, or is she giving us a whitewash job here?
That's Stefan? True.
Is that true?
I'm not sure.
As an archetypal.
Stefan's not sure. Why is Stefan not sure?
No, as an archetypal being, I'm not looking like that.
I said, if you were your ideal spirit, mind, and body, what does your ideal spirit, mind, and body look like?
Then the archetypal is even not visible. It's not made out of flesh and bones.
Is that what you were saying, Stefan? Is that what you're saying, Sylvia?
I say that the ideal spirit, mind, and body is always there, and
the ideal spirit, mind, and body is always there.
Yes, and it looks exactly like I'm looking, because.
And it looks exactly like you're looking right at this moment.
Right. Because it's my idea of it.
And what about your thought on that, Anita?
I do live in my ideal spirit, mind, and body right now.
You live in your ideal spirit, mind, and body right now. Inga? You live in what you have. I would say that's a apparent truth. Well, that's a good idea. What would you compare yourself to, if you were to compare yourself?
No comparison.
No comparison, good. Gertrude, what would you do? How would you respond to that statement that she is living in her ideal spirit, mind, and body now?
Yeah, I do too.
You do too?
Yes.
Oh, good. John?
I now live in my eternally perfect spirit, mind, and body.
You live in your eternally perfect spirit, mind, and body right now. And Irene? You're hesitant because you think there's a few improvements.
I'm looking for some
brilliant words.
It's just what it is.
Yeah? Christina? If you are in your ideal spirit, mind, and body, what do you look like?
I would look like now.
You look like you look now.
Yeah.
And Jerome, how would you look? Just like you look now. Is that good? Very good, huh? Yeah. Now, what about the rest of you? You've all heard this statement from everybody. You said it too, didn't you, Stefan? Or did I get to you? How would you look in your ideal spirit, mind, and body?
I'm not sure.
You're not sure? Well, and then he'll never look like it, will he? Until he has a conviction in his mind as to what he is. It doesn't have to be a particular picture, but it's a concept.
But that's the point. Here, with this body, we have a particular picture, and that can limit us.
Oh, sure, it does.
Yes.
But that's why the idea that the saying goes beyond any form.
Yes, it does.
Yes, it does.
Then you cannot say, this is how the body looks.
That's exactly
because the body has no form.
Well, I want you say you can't say how the body looks because the body has no form. I am saying that I'm asking you, how does the body look? Because I want you to say that you cannot say how the body looks because the body has no form and its ideal state. Is that correct?
Yes.
Is that correct for all of you?
For me, yes.
That's great. Is that correct for you, John?
I believe it looks like this.
You believe your ideal body looks just like the one you got?
Yes.
And you think you did a pretty good job?
Beautiful job.
Right. Okay. Now, and he maintains it too. You notice that? He gives it a lube job when it needs it, and he gives it an oil change when it needs it, right? And keeps enough petrol in there to keep it going good. And he also feeds his computer bank, right?
Yep.
That's great. Now, one day perhaps the body will just be a computer. Wouldn't that be exciting?
Well,
not really.
As long as we are a human being, the human gets used to everything.
Ingeborg says, as long as we're a human being, the human gets used to everything. So if the human got used to being a computer, it would be a happy computer. That's an interesting observation. I would have.
But it is not. It is more the divine, because the divine is happy with everything.
The divine is doing what?
With everything it has and it creates.
Run it.
The divine is happy with everything it creates.
The divine is happy with everything that it has created.
And it has.
And what?
With everything it has and it created.
Well, it has nothing that it didn't create. It created everything that it has.
I mean, that was just the same.
Yeah. Yeah, and it has everything, and it created everything. Mm-hmm. Yes? Is that your opinion, too? Is that the young prince's opinion, too? Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, you can speak up, you know. You have a great set of lungs.
Yes.
Yes, that's beautiful. That's beautiful, wonderful. Now, how do we go through this experience of living in this archetypal body or living in this ideal body that we have, and I don't want to say not, but for convenience sake, and not have the problems that the body seems to have from time to time, like arthritis or rheumatism or fat or thin or mentally efficient or deficient. How do we go through circumstances like that? What do we do?
Affirming.
Yeah, affirming what?
The ideal body.
Yeah, the ideal what?
The truth about ourselves.
I'm sorry?
The truth about ourselves.
Now, what is the truth about yourself?
I live in my ideal spirit, mind, and body.
Exactly.
Is there anything more that needs to be said?
No.
Then why do we say it?
Because we love it.
Oh, you're always right on top of it, Ellen. You're always right on top. We love it. We would like to experience the allness that we are. We would like to experience ourselves as fulfilled beings. We would like to live on the relative plane as we are and enjoy everything the relative plane has to offer to us. And the way that we do this is to live in our ideal spirit, mind, and body, correct? Okay, how do we live in our spirit, mind, and our ideal spirit, mind, and body? How do we live in it eternally? How do we live in it always, rather than vacillating between being in it and not being in it? How do we do that?
Living in it now.
Oh, another world heard from. By living in the now, why is that true? Everyone who wants to answer that.
The only dimension that there is.
Very good.
The only time.
The only dimension that there is, the only time that there is now. Very good. You believe that, Gertrude?
Yes.
Now, Gertrude, I'm sure you are able to do more than to say yes and no. You say yes and no very beautifully, I'm sure, I know, but it would be nice to have a little more of your rhetoric if you choose to give it. But why do you think, Gertrude, that we live in the here and now only?
Because it is only the now.
Yes, and?
And it gives no future, no past.
There is only the here and now, and there is no other what, you say?
It gives no future and no past.
No future and no past, that's correct. Now, why can you say that? Is that just some harebrained idea you picked up? Or is that what you believe?
That's what I believe.
Great. People are going to check us, you and I. They're going to check us and see if we really believe what we say. And so when we are confident in what we believe, we can never be challenged. And we will live in it beautifully. And who is the first person who is going to check us on what we believe?
Ourselves.
We're going to doubt it. We're going to check on it. We're going to say, yeah, I'm God, so let's demonstrate some health here. I'm God, so let's demonstrate some wealth here. I'm God, so let's demonstrate some of these things, you know? And you've heard that. So how can you demonstrate these things in a simple, easy, beneficial way at any time?
Being one-pointed.
Yeah, being one-pointed, that's very good.
Speaking my word.
Speaking your word, that's a big part of it, yeah.
Living it.
Ah.
By acting as
living it.
Yeah.
How do you live it? Yes?
By stopping wanting to demonstrate it.
By not needing to demonstrate it.
Yeah.
You live it by not needing to demonstrate it. Now, you all know that I can do some things now and then if I wish. And you all know that. And you all say, well, do it for her, sir. Show us her, you know, do it. And I do, but I don't tell you I'm doing it. And after I've done it, I say, did you see it? Did you see it? Did you notice it? And most of you didn't notice it because it's so common for you to see me doing things. And you don't realize that it's being done not just by me, but by you and by everyone all the time. Now, what we want to do, we want to do it consciously. We want to do it for our benefit. We don't need to prove it to somebody else, okay? You don't need to levitate so someone else can see it and say, my God, look at Gertrude can levitate. Isn't that wonderful? And somebody else says, oh, that's just a lark. That's just a hallucination. That's just an illusion that she can do it. She can't really do it. She has these mirrors that she has in her living room. And whenever you go in her living room, she's floating in the ceiling, you know. But that's just mirrors. You see, everyone is out to negate the things that we do because they haven't been able to accomplish it for themselves. Now, how do we accomplish these things? How do we accomplish these things? We do it for ourselves first, and we have fun doing it. All right. What kind of soup is John going to serve next time you serve a soup? What kind of soup, John?
Terrific soup.
Terrific soup. Is it going to be from the single can containers, or is it going to be from the multiple can? I think it's going to be from the multiple can containers. I think it's going to be from the multiple can containers, or else you might be replaced as cook. But
that sounds good.
That's okay too, huh? No, you see, I give you these things, and it's not to save money. Do you understand that? If we weren't to save money, there'd be a lot of things we wouldn't do. We turn off that jacuzzi, we turn off the Swimex, we turn off the sprinkler systems, we turn off a lot of things. And we would have a very great lot of money to spend on books and other things around here if we weren't cosmetically keeping up the place and enjoyably keeping it up. But we're not worried about that. We know that there is always an abundance. There is always money to do whatever needs to be done. But if we ever show a disrespect for money, If we ever go and light our cigars with money, we're going to get a great deal more than we ever counted on.
More
Why?
More
huh?
Money.
Why?
No possession.
No possession. No manipulation.
Yeah.
No concern. Yeah. But I'm really meaning it.
Yeah.
Now, just in illustration, Stefan dealt with his client. He had many clients. And he didn't charge anything. And they didn't pay anything. And so one of the clients was told that it is normal to make a charge. And it's normal to make a charge for a practitioner work on the same basis that a psychologist would get. And so they checked what a psychologist would get, and a psychologist would get how much an hour?
150.
Huh?
150.
150 Swiss franc an hour, or euro dollars, Swiss franc.
Swiss franc.
Yeah. And so he mentioned this to one of his clients, and one of his clients said, oh, thank you so much. But now, Dr. Barley was helping in this too. What should I pay him? And he said, well, whatever you choose, because none of us is better or worse than the other. So this person's consciousness was so beautiful that this person gave 500 Swiss francs to each of us. Now, what was he doing? He was giving the normal fee of 150, and he got 1,000. Pretty good, huh? Now, did he get 1,000 because he lit his cigars with $100 bills?
No.
Or did he get his 1,000 because he recognizes his worth? What is Stefan worth as a practitioner working? He's worth 500 Swiss franc or 1,000 Swiss franc, whichever. He's gotten it. He's earned it. Now, yes, Irene? You're making motions with your hand there. Go ahead.
Priceless.
Oh, priceless. Now, that's a good word. That's a good word. But you see, he doesn't understand priceless. Priceless means that he could never be paid. If you have the treasure in the museum that is priceless, there's no money that can buy it, right? And if your wife is priceless, nobody could ever take her away from you for anything, right? Right, Stefan?
Right.
Are you priceless or are you worth 150 an hour at the moment? Or 1,000 at the hour?
Priceless.
500. But did you... Did you get that?
Huh?
Did you get that?
Did you get that point?
Did you get 500?
Yes.
All right, you see, now he got 500. He can conceive of himself as being worth 500 an hour. Do you understand? He can conceive of that. Now, does he put this in consciousness that everyone pays it to him, even the people who can't afford to do it? Is your effort, your work, your treatment more beneficial than going to the theater? Yes! No, if a person is sick and they go to the theater paying 500 Swiss franc, or whatever, and the theater is kind of good, it's nice, it's for a moment it's satisfactory, then they come home and they still got their pain again. Mm-hmm. You're trying to give them...
If they go and laugh a lot, for example...
Now, don't mess me up.
Okay.
But if they go, they have a temporary reprieve, but then they come back home and they got the same pain. But if they deal with Stefan as a practitioner, the pain is gone forever. Correct?
Right.
Okay, so 500 Swiss francs spent on Stefan is far more than anything on any other purpose. Now, if he feels his worth is that he'll have. And if he feels his worth is priceless, then that he'll have too.
And you don't get
anything.
What? And you don't get anything.
That's right. You only get houses in Spain and castles here and there and things like that. No, really, but isn't that true?
Yes.
Yeah, so...
It's not priceless, it's endless.
Endless, yeah, that's right. The flow is endless.
Yeah.
Now, I think that's a good term, isn't it?
Unlimited.
The flow, endless or unlimited. Our flow of good is endless or unlimited. That's a nice idea, isn't it?
Yeah.
So think on these things and consider them for yourself. But we started out with sort of a weak direction, but I think we redeemed ourselves a little bit as we came along to come to realize that the law of cause and effect is a wonderful thing, but we have to be very careful. If we don't follow the directions, or maybe we didn't get the directions, but if we don't follow the directions, the law is going to be meaningless to us. If we follow the directions, the law is priceless to us. Priceless. It is wonderful to us. Think on these things. Consider them. And think, my word is law. I make sure I listen to the voice within. It is the word. The word is the declaration of truth and wisdom. Divine wisdom manifests as in logos. Logos is the word from John. Controlling principle of the universe, the word, the logos, the reason. Now we say reason has no part in the path of God, and that's true. But in the path of the relative man and the law of cause and effect, it has a lot of possibilities. So let's become aware of these things, let's put the causes into motion, and let's experience some pretty fantastic things. With that, we will prepare ourselves for a wonderful dinner of soup out of the individual container. Thank you very much. I love you.